All right, I'm just trying to check attendance here and see who's here and not here or what. Oh, hi, Bill. Oh, he's connecting. All right. So what's new with anybody?
All stuck at home.
There's nothing new.
Going from one video conference to the next.
That's all I do.
I did post all my final grades last night. That was a relief for me. I don't know about the students.
Hey there, Sarah Joe in real life. And Mike Suddy from the UK. How are things in the UK?
Yeah, still very bizarre, but yeah, we're right. How are you?
Hanging in there.
It's about the same thing here. Right? We're all, everything's crazy.
Okay. There's Bill.
Who's here?
Okay, so we're missing some people, but there people are coming on. Michael's there. All right, Jennifer, you on? Christy? Jeff Wozniak? Ken Jones? Sarah? All right, I just saw a bunch of people. Jeff's getting on.
Hello, everyone.
Hey, Jeff. And Sarah, no audio from Sarah, though. She's muted.
I'm here. I just didn't think you wanted to hear everyone in my house.
And that must be Tom. Tom, I see your name up, but I don't see you.
Ed, I'm trying to get my camera to work.
I just wanted to make sure that you could hear us.
I hear you.
All right, let's see. Hi, Michael, you there yet? Gosh, all right, so we got Jen Thomas, Christy Petrenko, Cristiano.
Yes.
Ken Jones, Tatiana Farood, Leah, Tom Donaldson's there, Dan Savage, Rajesh, and Miguel we know can't make it. All right, so just Christy, if we could get Christy and Jen on, we'd be pretty much ready to go, and Tatiana.
Christy is on.
Oh, there you are. You're muted. I can't hear you. Okay. And Michael, hello.
I'm on. I can't use audio on my computer because it's government blocked, but I can use my phone for audio.
Okay. So Jen Thomas, Ken Jones, Tatiana Farood, Leah Wetherill, and Dan Savage. Anybody there? Okay. Leah's there. Hi, Leah. All right. Well, it should be a relatively brief Zoom call. It just kind of get everybody together and see that everybody's here and hanging out and getting their stuff done. I got a grant submitted yesterday, so that was all good. Anyone have anything they would like to bring up before we start the official agenda? Everybody's good. All right, so Bill, and why don't you talk about what things that are going on at NIAAA in case you guys have to leave the call later on.
Sure. Can everyone hear me?
Yes.
So Joe and I wanted to point out that first thing, I guess, would be that NIAAA has released a notice of special interest on the availability of admin supplements and competitive revision supplements related to research on COVID-19. The Institute released this notice, I believe, maybe a week ago. And Jill did forward the notice to everybody. I would encourage folks to take a look at it. The research ideas around COVID have to be related to the mission of NIAAA, obviously, and importantly related to the research, the ongoing research within the UO1 projects. So I would encourage you to take a look at it. We are still working on procedures to review these at NIAAA. I will say that funds right now are limited. So I would encourage you to think about potential projects and reach out to Joe as the program officer on those to do an initial vetting before writing anything up. So with that, if anyone's had a chance to look at them and has questions, just let us know, or we can talk about it now. There is some language in there, I'm sorry, that talks about pregnant women, individuals with alcohol use disorders, things of that nature. Immune compromised individuals. So there may be an opportunity for CFAS, but again, funds are very limited at this time. So I would say select those projects carefully. And they do have to relate to your current aims.
Any questions?
I may add to Bill's point, it is, so there is a two track. One is this admin supplement where I think it is important your proposed idea should be related to your current research. But let's say you have a cohort that is specifically that you have access to, not very tightly related, but you can still propose that idea, send it to me, and we can discuss whether that can be used, the other mechanism that is competitive revision supplement. So just let you know.
I think, Tina, you have responded to one of the COVID RFAs, I believe.
Are you talking to me? I haven't responded to one, but we just responded to one from CDC. But the question I had is, operations for our UO1 are kind of shut down in Ukraine, but they do think they have about a 25% positive rate in healthcare workers there. And they would be interested, they are, continuing to provide prenatal care in the population where we're screening for women to enroll in the study. They would be interested in being able to look at COVID-19 positivity in those pregnant women, and obviously could be in association with the alcohol screening information they're already collecting. So that would be a possible thing to do that could, be, I guess, related to the aims of our current project. But they're not in a position right now to actually enroll those women in the UO1. The research operations are on hold for this period of time. So I don't know, I can talk with you, Joe, offline to see if there's any, interest or way that could be leveraged, or if doing this in another country would be of less interest to NIAAA, but I can certainly talk to you offline.
Yes, that would be great.
Okay.
Hey, I've asked Jeff Wozniak to give a little presentation of some new data that he has. Jill, can you turn that over to Jeff?
Ed, before Jeff goes, can I just say something real brief?
Sure.
Which is that we did have a symposium scheduled for the RSA meeting, now canceled, in New Orleans, and have an opportunity to bring it forward. And I think I've heard from everybody, and we're going to plan to just send forward that to the 2021 meeting.
Yeah, I saw one email about that, and I think that, I mean, it makes perfect sense. We're probably going to do a very similar thing with the UFAST meeting. They're going to carry that over because the UFAST meeting was canceled for September. And so it'll probably be next, and they're going to do the same thing and hold over the submissions.
Great. So
that's where we are. Was there any other business that had to be discussed before I turn it over to Jeff? And we're going to talk about some other stuff later, but I wanted Bill and Joe to be on for Jeff's presentation.
So I have one quick thing related to the symposium and meetings, and that is the Vancouver FASD meeting. Just to fill people in, the planning committee is kind of talking through how to handle it, and the what we're going to do is make the 2021 meeting a hybrid meeting, so it'll be a bit of a combination of the adolescents and adults meeting and the internationally focused meeting. So not everything submitted for the adolescents and adults will go forward exactly as is, or some might not go forward this time. But the idea is to make it a hybrid, to bring forward as many of the presentations as we can, or perhaps move some of them into posters or oral sessions if needed, and then develop the more internationally focused program around that. So.
Thanks, Joanne. I know that Bill and Michael and I and Joanne have all been working with them on trying to come up with a way to fit everything into one meeting.
Very busy.
Yeah, it'll be a busy meeting. All right, so Jeff, do you know how to take over control of the...
I've been doing Zoom meetings from 6 a.m. until 8 p.m. every day.
I'm really sorry about that.
No. I'm sure many of you all are doing the same. Actually, the host has disabled the participant screen sharing, so Julie, you need to either give me the access or... I'm not sure if you can do that mid-meeting. Is Jill still here?
Yep.
Jill, you're muted. Can't hear you, Jill.
Jill, if you just go to the share screen.
Yeah, I'm aware, and I fixed it, and I think it should be okay now.
Got it.
Sorry, on my laptop, I'm on two screens, and I couldn't find my mute.
All right, no, that's not what, let's try this again here. All right, share that. How's that?
Good.
Okay, so I think Ed just wanted to take the opportunity to maybe present something not related to COVID and something recent. This is not specifically CFAST, but it is FASD, and it's relevant to stuff we're doing. This paper is just coming out yesterday or today online in the journal Brain Stimulation, and this is a transcranial direct current stimulation study that we did and finished up earlier, a few months back, and this is now in press, or actually published. So maybe, Ed, do you want me to just take like 5 minutes, 10 minutes?
10 minutes, 15, whatever you need.
Okay. So this is pilot work, and the idea with this is to really get a sense for how we might take baby steps in terms of doing cognitive training, but augmenting the cognitive training with brain stimulation. So neuromodulation is pretty a pretty active field in terms of other areas of psychiatry and mental health these days. So because it's got clear cognitive implications, we decided to try to use this in a study, a small pilot study. So this is what it looks like. This is, we're wearing a cap here that allows you to basically position your stimulation anywhere you want, standard EEG format. You can also collect EEG while you're doing stimulation with this kind of a method. This is actually a little bit even older at this point, the caps that we're showing here. So this technology is moving quickly. This is very low voltage, you know, stimulates through the scalp, and the basic modeling data show that what you get here is kind of a widespread stimulation underneath the electrode. Not particularly deep, but the thought is that this enhances plasticity to some extent, so that there is a mechanism that at a very basic level we think what else is happening cognitively at that particular point. If the stimulation is targeted correctly, you might have the opportunity to enhance some aspect of learning. So what we're doing with this is doing cognitive training while kids are getting stimulation or sham. So in this case, the placebo version is, you know, they're wearing the cap, they get some kind of a stimulation, but it's very brief, and it just basically makes them feel like they're getting something when in fact they are not really getting stimulation. So the study that I'm going to describe was 40 kids, all of them had prenatal alcohol exposure, and they were given 5 sessions of TDCS. The stimuli that I'm showing there are from a program called, or a package called BrainHQ. This is just one of many cognitive training software packages out there. This one we have some relationships with the people involved in the company, and so we have access to being able to get at the data in a little bit of detail that they don't necessarily put out as public-facing data. So that allows us to kind of enhance our analyses of the data, things like looking at the learning curves and that sort of thing. So the tasks are kid-friendly, and they are things that we're very interested in FASD. So you can see here, there are measures of attention, processing speed, memory, intelligence, spatial skills, that kind of thing. But the stimuli are pretty engaging. And so what we did is a 6-visit trial. So we also did MRI in these kids. They came in, they got structural and resting state functional connectivity MRI. We did cognitive testing, and then we did 5 sessions of TDCS with them. It's pretty light. Normally with TDCS, you'd want to do more than 5 sessions, but in a pilot study, we wanted to see if there was a signal there. And then we have them come back for another MRI scan at the end and cognitive testing. So we have pre and post cog testing. We also have cognitive testing that happens each time, that's sort of built into the software to look at what their learning curves and things are. So what's the idea here? You know, the idea is that sort of repetition signals the brain that something is important. Obviously we know that, but also enhancing the cortical plasticity together paired may enhance the learning, whatever learning is taking place. These are sequential tasks. So they're gaining in difficulty, or they're increasing in difficulty as they do the tasks over the course of the sessions. Each individual is kind of on their own curve as far as how they advance, but the better they do, the more they advance. And then we know that salience is a factor here, so that you have to have something going on in context. You can't just stimulate the brain and expect that there's going to be a change. So that's where the cognitive training comes into play. This is probably hard to see, but you can can see that we basically had kids who were about age 12 on average, and they were pretty well matched in terms of things like race and SES and all of that across the two groups, the active and the sham group. Again, all of these kids had a prenatal alcohol exposure. We did not have a control group, like a non-exposed group. Study went pretty well. We randomized 44 kids. In the end, we ended up with 19 and 19 in the two groups, which is not bad for a trial with a population like this and a novel intervention, especially when they need to come back six times. And I'll just jump right into the one kind of main result that we actually found. And I'll say that there were a number of things that we did as far as pre-post testing where we did not see significant effects. So this is not a panacea. I think this is really baby steps in terms of seeing whether we can get any signal out of this kind of an intervention. And here's where the signal was in a continuous performance task, which is an attention test. It's a vigilance measure. How well can you stay focused on something that is changing and really requires concentration for a few minutes? And you can see that over the course of five sessions, there started to be some separation between the two groups, the active and the sham group. With the active group improving lower scores in terms of the standard deviation of the response time. So this is a measure of consistency. How consistently are they reacting to a concentration task as far as their reaction time goes? The more consistent you are, the better your attention is, essentially. So there was some separation there, significant separation by visits 3, 4, 5 on that one test. And then there was a little bit of a differential pattern in terms of if we look at their CFT performance or their attentional performance related to attention problems as rated by the parent. And you can see that there was a relationship there in the active group and not so much of a relationship there in the sham group, maybe suggesting that over the course of the trials, something was changing in the active group that maybe was being reflected in their behavior to some extent. I don't have much imaging data to show you, but we are working on the functional data. And there were some interesting findings in terms of if you look at some of the networks that we think might be involved in an attentional task like this, like the ventral attentional network, which is involved in shifting attention. We had some effects that were nearly significant there, which is not bad for a sample size this small and the number of sessions that were this small. So potentially some effect there in terms of group differences than what we might be able to detect with brain imaging. So again, the results are, there were a number of things where we did not see any differences, and we're sort of highlighting in this paper that we just published where we did see the effects in the concentration task. I don't necessarily think that this is going to jump right to clinical intervention, because I think we have a lot of work to do in terms of figuring out how we stimulate for what type of cognitive effect we're looking for. But the fact that we're able to do this with 40 kids with FASD, wearing an electrode cap, getting stimulation, which is a little bit of a sensory issue for some kids, but getting them through all the sessions shows that it is feasible. And I think that there's some real potential with this. Not to oversell it, but to point it out as an area where it's we're sort of taking baby steps. Questions?
Jeff, I have a question. This is Dan. Really interesting. As part of the functional imaging analysis, are you looking to see if there may be changes in the resting state networks from, say, trial 1 to trial 5? And
yeah.
Are there experience-dependent changes in the networks?
Right. That was the one figure that I showed you where we did have a little bit of a signal in the left insular region where there was different across, in terms of the change across five sessions, difference between active and sham. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Jeff,
yeah, this is John. This is also, I think this is pretty interesting. I had a couple of questions. Is looking at the change in the standard deviation, is that a standard kind of metric for this, for that task?
Clinically, it is, yeah. So clinically, we look at the standard deviation of reaction time on a CPT as one of the best measures of attentional change. So when you do something like do a pretest and then give a stimulant medication and do a post-test, oftentimes you'll see differences in that standard deviation around the reaction time. If you think about it, it's like a child who's sitting doing a concentrated task and their attention is lapsing or waxing and waning, they're going to have more variation in their reaction time versus a child who is kind of locked in. Their reaction time is going to be very steady.
Okay. And was there a change in the reaction time itself then, the mean over time?
There was not a change in the overall reaction time, no.
Okay. Thank you.
I was muted, but I just wanted to thank Jeff because in putting together the agenda for this, we had some ideas and they kind of got screwed up at the last minute. And Jeff was kind enough to fill in last night. He wasn't really contacted till about, I think, 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock. You got back to me about it.
Yeah.
He was in meetings all day. So I appreciate it. And you know, I think this is really fascinating stuff. And as you said, it's, you know, preliminary baby steps, but I think these interventions, you know, Jeff just also had a choline 4-year follow-up study come out, and so he's kind of on a roll. So good work, Jeff, and keep it up.
I have one question for Jeff, and that is the individuals who declined to participate, do you see barriers of concerns of safety, or was it more to do with the scheduling of having them come in so frequently?
Yeah, with a study like this, it's predominantly the commitment, the time commitment that causes people to not want to participate. We have a pretty high rate of participation because mostly we're recruiting from our clinics, either our clinic or a community clinic, FASD clinic that we're really connected to. So people tend to want to participate at high rates, but you know, when you start to get into 5-6 sessions, it's people are remarkably busy, and it's a challenge.
Bill?
Hey, Jeff, what's the youngest age, I guess, in the literature that this technique's been used on children?
Well, we went down to 8 in this study. As far as the youngest age, that's a good question. I don't actually know. I know that the caps are made for very small heads. You could theoretically do this in very young kids. I don't know how what the level of tolerance would be necessarily. And the cognitive training certainly would have a lower limit as far as how, you know, you're not going to get a 2-year-old to do
right.
That's cognitive training.
Any other questions? Well, thanks again, Jeff. I appreciate it.
Okay, thank you.
We have another point of business that Jill's been dealing with in trying to set up our meeting, our web Zoom annual semi or whatever it is meeting, and we can't find a date. So Jill, the doodle poll, you want to tell everyone what the results were? And
well, I just started with the advisory committee and there was one 2-hour block that worked for just the advisory committee members in the dates that I pulled. So I'm going to send out another doodle poll today, and I want you to treat it like someone, like maybe a federal agency is giving you money and you have to attend. So let's try it again, and fingers crossed we can make it work. And I have high hopes.
All right. So you'll get another doodle poll, but it was amazing that there's just no time where we could get more than, 3/4 of the people involved.
Maybe if I sell it as a yoga class.
And then if we were trying to do it on 2 days, it got even more crazy. So see what you can do, but try to make it as available as possible so that we can get this done. We're required to do it by the NIAAA, so help would be greatly appreciated. Okay, Sarah, you have anything to tell us about publications?
I do. So I'm going to try to share my screen. Okay. So we did have a concept proposal that just came in from Scott. Thank you, Scott. So this is the title, and if you want more information, I'm sure Scott would be happy to discuss that with you. We didn't have any manuscript submissions, but we did have two papers that came out from CFAS investigators. We actually found these by searching PubMed. We didn't get the post-acceptance forms, so the post-acceptance forms really help us because it provides us the information to publicize the paper, to send information to NIAAA and to NOFAS. So I've already reached out to the authors, and I'm sure we're going to get those. But hopefully, so these papers, I think, just are brand new. And I think that, yeah, we didn't have any from other CFAS investigators. So that's it for the publications committee. Just keep the submissions coming, and we'll have more to talk about next month.
Thank you. All right, any comments from the, we're gonna discuss some UH2 projects. And for that, Bill and Joe have to leave the call. But so I want to hear if there are any comments from Michael or the Science Advisory Board or NIAAA before we kind of go to that part of the call. Michael, SAB.
I don't think I have anything.
No.
Nothing to add.
Okay. Bill, Joe?
I don't have anything to add.
Before we kind of ask you to
leave.
Go do something else. And it's not a big
sounds deal. Good.
We're not.
I will say, if you have any follow-up questions about the UH2 RFA, to direct those to Joe.
All right. Does anyone have any really exciting data they wanted them to hear before they take off?
So,
yeah.
I have just one comment. It's not new data, but my group, independent of me, Tammy Bodner, Charlize Reinecke, Parker Holman, and in collaboration with Lori Vitale Cox in New Brunswick, just got a grant from CIHR called Learning Through Dialogue, Effects of Alcohol on Health and Well-Being in Indigenous Communities. And it's one of these outreach grants to bring education into the schools, to bring knowledge to the different communities. It involves Lori's community in New Brunswick, the Elpsoptagog, I don't know if I said that correctly, and then a community in the West also. And it'll be outreach to the communities, hopefully to spread it beyond just those two, bring education to the schools, bring knowledge to the communities, and work with elders and leaders and with the community members themselves to develop the curriculum and develop the materials. So it's a pretty exciting project. It's certainly related to our CFAST work in terms of outreach and bringing education about FASD, particularly to vulnerable communities.
Thanks, Joanne. Yeah, Bill, I don't know if this is the appropriate place to ask this question, but if it is, just say you can't answer it. Anything going on the consensus conference that was held? Any updates on that?
Yeah. Funny you should ask. Yes, Michael and I were discussing that last week, and we are going to re-engage the group here probably by the end of this week to to see if folks are able and willing to participate and to start looking at their data. So, yes. It's coming.
I'll just add that everybody looks very relaxed, and hopefully we'll have some time to do some data analysis right now.
All right, well, I'm looking forward to it. So thank you. And then Bill, Joe, good seeing you. Stay healthy and safe. And I'll be in touch as we need to be. All right.
Take care.
Good.
Thank you.
Great seeing everyone. Bye-bye.
All right, so the issue has come up and about the UH2 applications, and they did not want to be on the phone because they're going to be involved in the potential review and have input into the project. And one of the things that was screwed up was we were going to have a little discussion from some of the people who are going to submit these UH2s. But it was then, after thinking about it a little bit more, it was obvious there would be a conflict of interest if we invited people to present their ideas to CFAS. And so it was decided that would not be good to have as an overall type of agenda. But what it was decided was, I know that several people involved in CFAS are thinking of submitting or are planning on submitting one of these developmental projects, because this is the first time that CFAS investigators have been allowed to apply for the pilot project or developmental project program. And so we just wanted to get an idea of which groups were thinking of possibly putting one in, what they were thinking of doing. So